Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Dana Carvey and David Spade here.
You might know our podcast, Fly on the Wall, featuring guests from across the entertainment industry.
We decided to do a spinoff called Superfly, and it's fun. It's just two of us riffing on current events, pop culture, catching up, impressions.
Joe, Trump's trying to be a dictator.
Yeah, just bump on the tater tots.
Joe, no.
Listen to and follow Superfly on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
The Commanders were alive. And then they were dead. What's up? What's happening? It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are back streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. Apologies to the YouTube audience for disappearing for a week. The show is not on YouTube when I'm not here, and I wasn't here last Monday through Wednesday. And then Thursday and Friday, there were some technical deals that didn't allow us to go live, but we did put some up on YouTube on the highlights if you want to go back and watch, although you'd be listening to the preview of a game that we didn't quite see unfolding like that. Let's talk about it first and 10 style.
It's time to get the breakdown started. One, two, three, three. First up, 10 observations.
Mr. Good Guy, and just boom, put him right on the ground.
It's first and 10.
Oh, man.
Number one.
That's the weirdest football game I've ever seen. The first 3.5 quarters are a fairly normal, bad football game. I've covered a lot of games like that, especially in that stadium. Jay Gruden era, just terrible both ways. Two teams, neither of which deserve to win, just playing football nonsense back and forth. And eventually someone has more points at the end. In my experience, because of the time frame that I covered the team, mostly it was the visitor. And then the last 5 minutes of that game, Jaden puts together a beautiful 2-minute drive that looks like they're just going to steal the game. Obviously, the biggest steal comes off the Terry thing, and then all of a sudden, Cyber misses the kick. And there's just so much to chew on in so many facets of this game. But before we dive into specifically the offense to get started, we must simply acknowledge that is the weirdest football game I've ever seen in my life. And I was on the Washington football beat from 2015 to 2019 and have been covering the team from the studio side since 2020. It's a weird-ass football game.
Number two.
All right, let's talk about the offense. I'll tell you, I just got done watching the tape of the offense, and on tape, it is not as bad as it felt in real time in terms of a down-in, down-out execution. That's the good news. The bad news is it was even more frustrating because they actually did some good stuff in this game, and then they just kept finding a way to get in their own way and shoot themselves in the foot. And that is something that you actually see quite a lot of in the NFL from bad offenses. And that is kind of an actually more alarming thing than they just had a bad day, snap in, snap out. Like, a lot of offenses in the NFL are offenses that can string together a couple of plays and then you just know they're going to get in their own way. And we've actually talked about that quite a lot this year, because on the early portion of the season, the Commanders had this luxury of not being one of those teams, while defensively, they could play a style that relied on the fact that a lot of the NFL is. A lot of the NFL, the Titans, who are going to be here next week, are like the ultimate version of this, where, yep, they're probably going to make some plays. Down in, down out, they're actually, we'll move the football in some decent chunks even. And then Will Levis will do one of the craziest quarterback things you'll ever see. Or they'll take a sack or six sacks. Or yesterday they actually took 8 sacks. And they will not ultimately be able to put up the points they need to win. They did yesterday against Houston. But by and large, like, that's how their season has gone. The Cowboys are kind of the same way. Eventually they'll do something to screw it up. And the Commanders have become that team. They've become a team that eventually will, at the very least, not finish drives in the red zone, but will probably find a way to screw it up, whether it is in this game. They're driving a little bit. They get going. They're like 5-6 plays into a drive. And by the way, all these drives have a tremendous starting field position, but they're 5-6 plays into a drive, and Tyler Biadasz snaps it on one, and clearly the snap count was at least 2 because he's about the only guy that moves. And then Jaden just has to wind up taking a sack. It's only a -1, but you've now gone from, I believe it was like a 1st and 10 or a 2nd and 10 to, or a 2nd and 6 to 3rd and 7. And you go from like, hey, 2nd and 6, we're okay. We just get 2-3 yards on a run. It's 3rd and 3. Like, that's where you want to live. Now it's 3rd and 7. You're in a bad spot. They get intercepted on a freaking screen pass in the red zone. You're on like the 22-yard line, so fringe red. One of Cliff's favorite spots to call a screen. And that getting intercepted is on Brian Robinson. And I know that Jaden probably could dirt that. But like, if you freeze frame it, or you look at it frame by frame, if B-Rob can get to a place where he, if B-Rob can get to that ball and like Jaden kind of leads him, and it's not a great throw. It's a little hard for my liking. Like, Jaden's trying to elude pressure and he just fires it in there. And if he can loft it out a little bit more, Brian can run under it, get around the block, and maybe something's happening. But either way, just like, don't bobble it up in the air into the other dude's arms. There's no way that should be picked. And it is. And they go from at least a field goal if Jaden throws it in the dirt to whatever that was. The 8-11 left in the game. They give up the touchdown to Schoonmaker. They come out. They need to get going. They give up. Yeah, the touchdown to Schoonmaker. It's 13-9. They need to get going. And lo and behold, John Bates fumbles. That play design is fantastic. It's a tendency breaker. They do it on a lot of running on first down. Eckler's in there. It looks like they're going to toss it out to him. And they pull the whole defense one way. Bates runs against the grain. Jaden hits him in stride. Easy throw. Easy catch. Phenomenal job by Cliff manufacturing something easy. Great job by Jaden to deliver a ball with anticipation on time. In stride. And Bates just gets the ball knocked out. And it's that kind of stuff all the time that just absolutely kills you in this football game. Which gets us to
number 3.
The offense in general right now looks a lot like LSU's offense in a way that concerned us before the draft, with like kind of what would Jaden Daniels be as a pro. And a lot of those concerns were alleviated early in the season because he did a great job of attacking the middle of the field, throwing with great anticipation, tight windows. He was unbelievably accurate in some of these spots. And then lo and behold, he regresses a little bit to the mean. You have this, this kind of game where he's just throwing a bunch of hitches and goes. And you can't win in the NFL that way. It's just too hard to live on one-on-one matchups on the outside. And it's not necessarily the play calls. It's the quarterback's decision-making to say, hey, I've got these matchups. I'm going to pick the ones on the outside versus letting, you know, a guy like Zach Ertz get open over the middle and hitting him there, or, hitting a dig later on in the down. I'm just going to take the hitch here. Like, I'm going to read this side of the field where we have a one-on-one matchup versus the three-receiver side, which is a little bit more complex, but maybe offers us a higher ceiling because we can get a guy that breaks free and breaks open. And so, unless these are predetermined and Cliff is saying, hey, we're doing this, it doesn't matter what's happening on the three-receiver side, just take the one-on-one, this is a quarterback-driven thing, not necessarily a play-caller-driven thing. You have to find those spaces in the middle of the field. And I know Jaden can do it because he did it earlier this year. And by the way, late in this football game, that two-minute drive with 5 minutes to go, he's ripping footballs all over the place. Digs, comebacks over the middle. Like, as the game went and he kind of had to have it, there's a play that he runs, a throw that he makes on a play that I love in Madden all the time. In Madden, it's called play action comebacks. And they run it, they get to it a little bit differently. They run it out of an eye or a pistol formation. And it's just a quick token fake, but you have tight splits. And then Terry and Noah run deep down the field. Looks like they're pushing vertical and they just stop. And you have to throw that ball with great anticipation while it still looks like it's going to be vertical and trust that your receiver is going to stop exactly where he's supposed to, turn around and have the ball hit him in the chest. And he hits Noah on one of those, and it's how they get out of on that big long drive. It's how they get out of the first and 20 after the Senate hold, was they run that play. And it's a, like, he can do it. He's got to do it more often. He's got to do it earlier in the game. And if you want to put that on the coaches to say they've got to coach that up and emphasize that, fine, but ultimately it's got to be on the quarterback to do it.
Number four.
Which leads me to something that probably a lot of you, I know how this works. You're going to be mad at, but it is what it is, so I'm not going to just pre-fight the fight and yell at people who are going to yell in the comments section. But on the list of problems, I don't have Cliff Kingsbury probably as high as many of you do. If you're Cliff, I don't know necessarily what you call to feel really confident in right now, which is a really rough spot as a play caller. Because when you get picked off on a screen, you're going to call another one? Like, you don't feel good about that. It's a kind of a, supposed to be a low risk, potentially high reward play, and you have had nothing but bad plays off of it for weeks on end. I'm not calling that. Okay, so that's out. How else have we gotten easy yardage? Let's run the football. Well, we got some guys on our line that are struggling a little bit right now to nail their blocks. And especially once Andrew Wiley gets out, like, oh boy, we got a running game. No B-Rob and Trent Scott's blocking instead of Andrew Wiley. I don't know that I feel good calling a lot of the runs that were successful for us earlier in the year. All right, well, let's go quick game over the middle. Jaden doesn't really seem to want to throw a lot of that. He's wanting to throw to the outside. And so it becomes a lot of these hitches and goes. And if I have any real critique for Cliff, it would be kind of two things. One, you got to find something in the run game. And I don't care if it's calling these game plan runs, these kind of trick handoff delays, but even those were going for like 3 yards. But you just got to keep searching. And in this game, they went a lot of 13 personnel, and I think they probably could have tried to spread some things out and get some runs out of some different formations. There was a lot of zone read in this game. I'll have a better sense of that after I talk through it with Logan tomorrow on Take Command. But I just feel like there's been ways for them to find something in the run game pretty much all year, and I don't feel like they did yesterday. And it's also hard because you have offensive line and running back changes in the game. So there's a lot of, maybe you find something and then Wiley goes out and then you're like, oh crap, you can't do that anymore. So it's tough gig. And then the other one is going to sound just backwards from what a lot of people I think came out of this game thinking, which is, oh, he didn't throw enough deep shots, not aggressive enough. He was actually too aggressive at times in this game. They were really trying to find big plays down the field. And I think at times, especially considering how good the field position was, like, just take what the defense gives you. And that's hard because Dallas did mix up their coverages quite a bit. There is some first or some cover two stuff where it's like, okay, what they're giving us was the underneath stuff. Well, now they're in cover two, which is designed to take that away. Okay, well, now let's go back to the deep stuff. So Dallas did a good job and called a good defensive game. But, you know, finding ways to maybe, you know, whether it's sending Jaden in the line with two plays or giving some of the audible control, whatever it is, like, you got to be able to take what the defense gives you. They were given some of the underneath stuff early. Like, Terry could have gotten a lot more looks early. Hey, we're calling the double hitches here. Like, look to Terry's side. And so some of this is just getting McLaurin more involved early. But it really is a thing where the execution of the plays, the routes actually being run, the balls being thrown, the decisions being made that just catch the ball. Like, that stuff is a bigger problem. The blocks being executed. They face a ton of pressure in this game because Micah Parsons gave Nick Allegretti a hellish kind of day when they lined Parsons up over him, which was a good job by Dallas doing some stuff they hadn't done a ton of earlier in the year. So that stuff to me is more emblematic of their problems than the play calls themselves, even though everyone just wants to yell at the play caller because that's what people do when we talk about football. All right, that gets us started on our first and 10. Our final six, we'll talk about defense. We'll talk about special teams. Oh, is there a lot to talk about? And some of the other stuff at the end of this game that was absolutely bananas. We'll get to it all next as we empty the notebook out on the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. Your calls on this Misery Monday, a Tell the Truth Monday, coming up at 4:30 at 301-230-0980. Let's continue our first and 10, though. As we got six more observations to empty out the notebook from the Commanders and Cowboys.
Number five.
Obviously, special teams played, you might say, a quite large role in this game. I've never seen a special teams game like that. This game had a blocked punt, a blocked field goal, two kick return touchdowns, and five missed kicks in total. That counts, obviously, the blocked field goal. But Aubrey misses another one as well. Seibert goes 0 for 2 on PATs and misses the 50-plus yarder. And just the bizarreness of all of that, the Turpin touchdown is wild. I thought Sanders still got blocked in the back, but the bigger problem is Jordan McGee jumps out of his lane. But that is a Deion Sanders classic. Deion did that a ton in his career where he'd muff a punt or a kickoff and then pick it up. Guys like, oh, ball, and they get out of their lane, and that's enough for a guy who's that quick, that fast, like Deion was, like Turpin is, to take it to the house. And it was 20-17. You had two timeouts. You're north of the two-minute warning. And what should have been an ultimate backbreaker. And yeah, in some way, you have to credit the Commanders for their continuance of fighting and the Terry TD and the whole deal, but that was just brutal, which leads us to
number six.
Speaking of Austin Seibert, this is the problem with Austin Seibert and kickers like him. And this is not meant to be a personal attack on Austin Seibert. This is a professional commentary on his skills. He has been money from inside 40 yards in his career. He's never missed from inside 40 outside of a couple of PATs. Those weren't this year until he missed a couple of PATs. His first two misses of the year, which makes it all the more painful. But rewind. That 50-yarder, I don't think they should have given that to him. He's not trustworthy on those types of kicks. He's kicked the ground multiple times. And in that particular case, that seems to be what happened. And maybe the operation's a little bit bad, but let's get a clean kickoff, please. And instead, fourth and two, like, I'm going for it. I have Jaden Daniels. And they don't. And we'll get to more on Dan Quinn's decision-making in just a moment. But outside of not being able to kick 50-yard field goals reliably, you also can't kick the ball through the back of the end zone reliably. And when it's 20-17 and Zach Ertz scores and you are north of the two-minute warning with two timeouts, you want as much time to, or as little time to run off as possible. And you can't give up a big explosive play. You certainly can't give up a score. And so kicking the ball through the end zone would make a lot of sense. And so I asked Quinn after the game, what was the thought process there? And he goes, well, kicking the ball out of the end zone is not as easy as you think. And I, in the back of my head, was like, it is if you're Joey Sly the last couple of years, who had a literal 100% touchback rate. It is if you're Justin Tucker. It is if you are Brandon Aubrey. It is if you are one of the big leg kickers in the NFL. And Seibert is just not that. So instead, they go with what is the best option for them because they can't guarantee that Seibert's going to actually kick a touchback. And that is a dirty ball. And obviously, the worst possible outcome happens. And it's a miracle that they have a remote chance from there because of the Terry touchdown. But if they just kick the ball out of the back of the end zone and play defense, I think Washington has a really good chance to make a game of that. And instead, they don't. And they wind up making it a game anyway. But it's just, this is the downside of going with what they did at the kicker position. I understand they were in a terrible spot. Seibert has mostly been good. I probably wouldn't cut him after this performance. I'd probably give him at least another week, but I have to think about it because Zane Gonzalez was also good in his one appearance and he's already in the building.
Number seven.
Speaking of Seibert and the decision-making by Quinn, it had a bad day at the office. The whole operation. Bad snaps. Trest did his best with the holds, considering, and Seibert missed three kicks. Terry scores this miracle touchdown. Just go for two. And I don't feel so strongly about this that I'm like, this is a terrible decision by Quinn. How could he possibly? I get it. Seibert's been money on. He missed one extra point. What are the chances that he's going to miss another one when he's missed zero all year? He made 20 in a row, 22 in a row. He's missed one. Okay, cool. Let's get it on. Let's go to overtime. And, of course, that's not what happened. You have another bad snap. You have a botched kick. And you then wind up giving up the onside kick touchdown, which is actually the best thing to happen there because it gives you a chance. If dude just goes down, you take a knee and the game's over. But considering how unsettled Dallas must have been in that moment, considering how easily you got the two earlier, considering who your quarterback is, fundamentally, I am going headline. Jaden Daniels, the ball is in your hands. And I am willing to live and die with Jaden Daniels on one play. And I understand, because I asked Quinn about that afterwards, or he was asked about that afterwards. I don't think I actually asked that one. But he was basically like, I didn't want it to come down to one play. And theoretically, it shouldn't have. You kick the extra point. It's all but a formality. And then off you go into overtime, and you have lots of plays to decide the game. But it's not like you're playing well. Yeah, you have the momentum, but just take the momentum before it dies and go for two. So again, is it an indefensible decision? No, it's just clearly not the decision I would have made in that moment. I am trying to say we're stomping on your throats. And I think that is the thing that kind of bugs me sometimes about Quinn's decision-making is they talk about being bold. They talk about having this aggressive attitude. And then they manage games extremely conservatively. And I know that you have to be smart, and there are times it has definitely worked off, and maybe in the long run, they're actually doing the right thing. But it just doesn't match the identity of who they are, of being ultra aggressive. We will punch you in the mouth in the most aggressive way possible at all times. And that is part of like who the Lions are. And so if you're going to be that team, then go there all the way, especially when you have arguably the best, if not one of the two or three best, fourth and short quarterbacks in the entire league that defenses have barely been able to stop all year. And in fact, the only time you haven't gotten a fourth down all year is when the quarterback bobbled the snap. You've basically beat yourself. No one has stopped you. So before the 51-yard field goal, after the Terry touchdown, I'm just going for two. That is how I think this football team should operate, and it is clearly something that they don't agree with.
Number eight.
Defensively, they mostly played pretty well in this game. It felt like the run defense is clearly an issue. And that's something I got to look at. Pass rush, we'll talk about that more in a second. But the touchdown they gave up to Schoonmaker late is why they need Marshawn Lattimore. And it is not like it's not BSJ's fault. But because of what happened in the Pittsburgh game, BSJ is on an island out there with CeeDee Lamb, and Quan Martin is like, I'm going to make sure that Cooper Rush knows that he can't throw this ball over here because BSJ is not on an island. So they give him the safety help that we all wanted in the Pittsburgh game. And what happens? There's no one in the middle of the field. Safety or linebacker, whoever it was, doesn't carry Schoonmaker up the seam. And it's a wide open touchdown. And so that is incredibly frustrating. But it just goes to show some of the sacrifices that have to be made because they don't have a one-on-one shutdown corner. And voila, that down goes that.
Number nine.
The pass rush in this game was absolutely horrendous. And Dan Quinn was very not happy about this after the game. He was asked about it very briefly post-game. And Ben Standing set up a question and he was like, hey, so it looked like the pass rush wasn't really effective today. And Dan Quinn goes, I agree. Not good at all. In fact, they had four total pressures. They had one sack. They had one quarterback hit per PFF. They had two hurries all game. That is really, really bad. In any game. That is inexcusable for a pass rush this good against an offensive line that was missing its two starting guards and starting a rookie at center. And has a rookie at left tackle and a pretty meh right tackle by NFL standards. That is not good enough. And we can talk about all the other stuff you want to defensively. This pass rush unit cannot perform like that and expect to win football games. They kind of overcame it defensively. And if the offense gave them anything, then that would have been great. But also, like, Dallas cost themselves points in a litany of ways. That was a bad Dallas performance, and they somehow got away with it with the win, which brings us to
number 10.
If you are a Cowboys fan, you won. Congratulations. Your team played crappy football yesterday, and you got away with it. And you literally gave up one of the most embarrassing plays in the history of the NFL. The McLaurin touchdown at the end is really remarkable. Like, you watch that thing on tape and you're like, oh, this is on purpose. Like, they find a way to manipulate the Dallas, like, picket fence defense. They clearly look situationally, and I think Cliff basically must have been like, or whoever, Tavita, whoever was like, look, if we can fit a ball right here, right now, we can steal a bunch of yards. And sure as you know what, they did, and then Terry just kept on running. That's great, but that can't happen if you're Dallas. That is unbelievably embarrassing. And the fact that they get away with it is a shame. They should get a loss in the loss column. Not saying the Commanders should get a win because they also deserve to lose, but that's kind of the thing. That was a football game where both teams deserve to lose, and unfortunately, someone had to win. And even more unfortunately, for those rooting for the burgundy and gold, that someone was the Dallas Cowboys. When we get back, your calls, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. You already got a couple folks calling in. Tell the Truth Monday is next.